Hey, people, listen up. It's a fucking lockdown right now.
Come off it. We're not in a prison drama, are we?
We are in a prison drama. This is the fucking Shawshank Redemption, right? But with more tunneling through shit, no fucking redemption.
Screw you guys. I'm going home.
Sheriff, this is no time to panic. This is the perfect time to panic.
It's not the end of the world.
I ain't going with you. I'll go with Child.
Hey, fuck you, Palmer!
I'm going with you!
Who says I want you going with me?
All right, cut the bullshit!
Has the whole world gone crazy?
Hey! Everybody calm the fuck down.
It's Mars on the Hudson. It's Cheers Goes to Harlem.
Get you something to drink, brother.
It's E.T. Rides the Underground Railroad.
Want to see me make all the white people disappear?
125th Street next.
That was fantastic.
It's the brother from another planet.
Man is a fugitive from a chain gang.
He's got radar for a mind, removable eyes, and a lovable smile.
Give me five, brother.
White folks get strange all the time.
It's John Sayles' dazzling and propelling comedy hit. It's the box office blast guaranteed to open your eyes.
The brother from another planet, yeah.
Welcome to another episode of Holmes Movies Recommends. My name is Anders Holmes. I am joined by my brother Adam over Zoom in America.
Hello. It's good to be here.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Yeah, I tried to do it slower this time so I wouldn't.
We'll do the Edward Morrow version. This is Holmes Movies Recommends.
Like Walter Cronkite, Apollo 11. I mean, Holmes Movies.
Yeah, it's one of those voices. Yeah, I think Edward Morrow even more for our time because of how fucked up everything is.
True that.
Okay. Holmes Movies Recommends.
Yes, last episode I recommended Spider Baby, so today it's your episode. Just before we get into that, did you by any chance read the John Boyega interview for GQ?
I haven't read it yet, but I'm very interested to. I've seen some extracts from it, and I mean, he will probably never make another Disney movie, but he is... He said some very, very important things that, you know, we've touched on, especially when we reviewed Return of the Palpatine or whatever it was called, the last Star Wars movie.
The Return of the Jedi.
Spectre. I would have loved it if Palpatine was just been like, cuckoo.
Come, Mr. Skywalker.
Yeah, good.
No, but he did touch upon a lot of points. And I mean, one of the quotes that he did say was, what I say to Disney is do not market a black character as important and then push them aside.
Right.
And I think that is fair. That's what happened.
I mean, the second film, he gets some moment, he gets to kill Captain Phasma.
Yeah.
And he has that moment with Kelly Marie Tran's character, Rose, who is then also written out of the film. So he has so little to do. I mean, and I was, after the first one, I thought there was going to be a gay love story between Finn and Poe. But which we also spoke about on that episode, that maybe they missed the chance to do that and they just had that... two women embracing at the end of the third movie, but it's...
Which, I mean, it seemed a little bit... I mean, they did it a little bit in Avengers Endgame where they had this moment where all the, like, female superheroes, like, charged the bad guys all in one. And I think it's kind of like a really sort of inspirational moment a little bit, but it's a bit too little too late. If they were all about diversity and stuff, then they could have done it ages ago, or I don't know, just...
Right, well, and also because Revenge of the Palpatine Jedi Sith thing, whatever it's called, has got some serious issues. I mean, and actually, you know, I'm glad you brought this up because it's actually relevant to the film I'm going to recommend, because sci-fi, and I include the Star Wars films in this, and actually fantasy itself, you know, if you broaden it out to include stuff like Lord of the Rings, there's a whole load of racism in these movies. in the way that, for example, in The Lord of the Rings, there are no black characters until, oh, one shows up riding an elephant. You know, it's like, you know, it's in the Star Wars films, anytime a planet which is like a little bit folksy or a little bit like, you know, backward or whatever, it's always like a desert planet where people live in huts or in earth houses that resemble, you know, either the Asian subcontinent, sub-Saharan Africa, or indigenous American people, whatever it is. It's just like these films have, they, you know, worlds of whiteness and a sort of racial hierarchy exist within these movies, that there are people who, you know, if there is anyone who ever has a sort of old-fashioned religious belief that isn't the sort of noble Jedi thing, but if it's a sort of weird like custom or some kind of thing, it's always either like an alien creature that's dressed as in a sort of deliberately, like, and I'll use this word very carefully, primitive way, but or it's literally a person of color. And it's just, you know, someone's honking outside.
Wasn't me.
You know, and it's frustrating. And it's, you know, you are working in a made up world. You are in a fantasy world. Literally, you have the power to change. You know, there's no reason at all why Boromir can't be black. Although half the internet is now going to disagree with me, but you know, fuck off, racist. Like, it, there is no reason why shut up. Honking. What are you honking at?
But there's someone just saying, like, quit talking about Star Wars.
Boromir is white. It's clear from the books that Boromir's a man. He's a Celtic man, Nordic. I don't know. There is just this unwillingness to say, well, look, we live in a fucked up world of, you know, systemic racism and, you know, racial prejudice around religion and cultural practices. You know, we have a chance to upend that. It's not to say that it's a job of these films to be activists per se, but don't bolster existing, you know, don't take white America and impose it onto the galaxy far, far away and a long time ago. Don't take, you know, Northern Europe in the 1940s and its proclivities and superimpose them onto Middle Earth. You can have so much more leeway, you know, about how you do these things if you understand that you don't have to follow, you know, it's the imagination of the author is not one that you have to be, in terms of how they see their characters racially, it's not one that you have to hew to. I mean, look at the Harry Potter series. And you got J.K. Rowling's books are full of stereotypes. You know, you got the Cho Chang, you know, you got the Irish kid who likes to blow shit up, you know, and she's gotten in trouble because she's come out and said some stuff that's been interpreted as transphobic. And I haven't been following it too closely, but for what I have seen, she's behaved like a bit of an idiot, frankly. And I think that.
She's also doubled down on quite a lot of things when people kind of call around on it, which is also kind of bad as well. And I feel like this year with the pandemic going on, there have been moments where, like, we've really kind of seen truth in a lot of people, like especially with people like Ellen DeGeneres, because there's a lot of things going on about her with her show and the sort of culture of the show, and like there's been workplace bullying and maybe she's not as kind of, there's just been some issues there and stuff. I mean, some of it might be a bit hearsay.
Well, they did sack a bunch of people. I mean, it's not just hearsay, you know. And before the pandemic, you also had the college admission scandal over here, which is, you know, famous people buying themselves. I mean, it is, the whole thing's rotten to the core. But the pandemic has exposed things, and there's a lot of celebrities who are just showing just how hopelessly out of touch they are. I mean, remember the Imagine video that the people put together, and it was just,
oh God, I didn't want, I saw like I
watched,
a clip of
I
it
watched
and
the
I was
first
just like,
few seconds of it, and I wanted to throw my phone into the pit of Sauron or whatever. It was like,
but did you watch the other one that they did, which is the, like, I take responsibility video, the one that came out just after George Floyd was murdered? Yeah. It was basically like, it was I can't remember exactly. I remember it was seeing like Aaron Paul and then Sarah Paulson and people like that. And it was like, they were like, it was a bit like the Imagine video, but it was like them talking to camera. It was also in black and white, the footage. And it was basically them saying, I take responsibility and things like that. And also like taking responsibility for what? Have you said something racist?
Yeah. Did you shoot a black man? No, I mean, the problem is, it's not taking responsibility. It's to say, we've talked about this before, but like, it's that we all have a responsibility insofar as, yes, we are members of the body politic. It's our duty to call out racism when we see it. It's our duty to vote in a way that makes it harder for racists to sort of thrive in the world. But more than that, it's important to recognize our own prejudices and our own roles in perpetuating racism in our daily lives. I mean, in the case of, you know, the world of film, it is, as Frances McDormand pointed out, possible to go up there and say, you know what, I want, what is it, a diversity rider or whatever she said?
Diversity rider.
You know,
I
think and stuff like that, you know, make sure that the films you take part in, especially if you have the ability to choose, like Aaron Paul does, make sure they reflect the world and take responsibility in that regard. But it's that sense of there's a desire to sew on the sort of merit badge of I recognize that racism is a thing and I recognize the role in it that I have. It's like they sew that merit badge onto their, you know, their uniform, and then it's like, okay, cool, I'm done with that discussion, let's move on to the next thing. And it's not to say that I don't claim to have the answer, but it's just this tendency to that of celebrities to sort of jump in two-footed to these things and make it about them is just very distasteful. But anyway, as I say, back to what I was talking about, the John Boyega interview is very timely, and it is extremely relevant to not just the discussion around the practices of Hollywood and the practices of Disney and the way that we think about, you know, made up fairy stories, but you know that they should still be predominantly white or whatever, but it's also, it gets at a very crucial reason why that trilogy failed, because they didn't follow, Abrams did not follow the best the pathways that he himself, the most interesting pathways that he himself laid out in that first movie. And he instead, and that Rian Johnson built on in the second one. And the ruin that he does in that third film is just abysmal. And so much of it is based on listening to the trolls and writing Kelly Marie Tran out of the story, castrating the Finn character, making him completely boring. And you know, and there's your, you know, and there's the trouble. You know, there is the memories that I have of that second film, of that scene with, it's, you know, it's Finn and Rose, isn't it, on the casino planet, riding around on that, because you've got an Asian American woman and a black man from South London in one of the most iconic scenes of one of the biggest film of the year. You know, they're in charge of that film. In fact, they are the, apart from, you've got the Rey line storyline, Rey and Kylo Ren, but they're the other storyline in that movie, and they have equal weight. Yeah, and Rian Johnson did that, and he did that, and he delivers a more interesting Star Wars film that's been the most interesting Star Wars film that's been made since Empire Strikes Back. And then Abrams sees that and says, "Well, a lot of people didn't like Kelly Marie Tran because they're racist."
But I wouldn't say it's not really him, but it's also like Disney.
Yeah,
kind
but
of,
like he's got to take some responsibility as the director.
Yeah, of course.
And he helped write the script, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, what do you, and he must have known about the trolls on Twitter. And so instead of doubling down and saying, well, screw you, she's going to be the main character in the, she's going to be one of the main characters in this whole thing, they write her out of the, you know, he bends, at least implicitly, he's bending to that pressure. Anyway, enough.
Yeah.
The film I'm recommending is relevant because it is a sci-fi film that deals with race in a way that is both, that is meaningful, that is moving, that is amusing and not, you know, not too sort of on the nose. And that is 1984's The Brother from Another Planet, directed by John Sayles,
which I really want to see. John Sayles really does seem like a very engaging and interesting filmmaker. And I saw another one of his films recently, which was also really good, which also kind of reflected a bit of the time we're in now, not just George Bush's America, but America that we're living in now. But no, that film sounds really, really interesting. Did you watch, is it on the Criterion channel?
No, I rented it on Amazon. Okay. So it is on Amazon Prime. You can rent it if you're in the States, or if you've got a VPN. It is just an absolutely delightful film. It's about an alien who looks like an African American man. He crashes his spacecraft and he lands in New York, literally on Ellis Island. He then hops a ferry and ends up in Harlem, where he is greeted by a mystified populace, but one who nonetheless do everything they can to help him. And it's very interesting that in the first sort of, third of the film, the only characters, apart from one, who really go out of their way to help him are black people. Everyone else treats him with suspicion or hostility. And again, as I say, that sounds more on the nose than it is. The way it's conveyed in the film is just so heartfelt and so funny as well. You know, the characters in the film, especially the barflies in this bar that he ends up in, are just some of the best comic creations you'll see in American cinema. There are some really great just like shots of Harlem in the 80s and a lot of reflections on what Harlem means as a place, in the changes that it had already undergone by that point. And it's just, you know, sad to think about now how gentrified it's become, much like Brixton in South London.
Has it become
gentrified? Yeah, I think it's on its way to being so, yeah. And that's sad, you know, it's a cultural heritage that's going, you know, by the wayside. And anyway, the story unfolds and you get these wonderful two characters who are referred to as the Men in Black. So you wonder about the inspiration for that movie. But these two creeps who are played by John Sayles, the director, and by a young, fresh-faced David Strahan, on our main character's tail. He's played by Joe Morton, his performance is absolutely...
Joe Morton is a great actor. He's very underrated.
Doesn't say a word in the whole film, and his performance is just, I was going to say out of this world. He's so completely soulful and poignant, and he has this. There's a melancholy that he projects. That is just so, I think it's the crucial note in this otherwise quite funny movie, that there is this great sadness in his character and his reactions to certain impulses and moments are just so, it's like you take the best parts of E.T., you know, the most humanist parts of that movie, and you strip away all the Spielberg fluff and you turn it from a Muppet into an actual person, and you get, you know, this the brother from another planet. And there's some social messages in there, and of course, and there's a lot of, you know, you can meditate a lot about race and immigration and cultural identity if you want, but it's also just a really well done comedy. It's an hour and 49 minutes long. You know,
nice.
Brilliant example of how to make a film on a tiny budget. But you know, another thing I thought about is normally tiny budget films, maybe they don't have that many characters. There are tons of characters in this film, each one more wonderful than the next. And one of the most interesting things is John Sayles, white director, it does not feel like Jackie Brown, you know, a blaxploitation film made by a white director. It does not feel like, it really feels like a film that's made for a black audience largely with that kind of vernacular in mind. And it and that's impressive considering he wrote the script as well. So
is he the editor on the movie as well? Because I know he did the editing on Lone Star.
And... I actually don't know. But, you know, you want to suspect. I think he... Let's have a look here, actually. Oh, yes, he did edit it. I mean, I know he basically financed it himself. He got a MacArthur grant and made the whole thing for $350,000, which is also incredible.
Yeah, I mean, he did come from, like, low-budget filmmaking anyway. I mean, he wrote the screenplay for Joe Dante's Piranha, and they collaborated on a few low-budget horror movies like that. And The Howling, and he even shows up in The Howling in a small cameo role. And yeah, I think it's interesting that, like, his career with these very sort of low budget schlocky movies, but then he able to make these kind of thought-provoking human movies and things like that, like humanitarian movies.
Honestly,
almost.
I've only seen two of his films, this one and Lone Star, and they've both just become absolute favorites, you know. I love this. I cannot recommend it highly enough. I think it's a great film for now. It's a great read the John Boyega piece and then maybe go watch this to see, you know, this is a film that was made in 1984 but has a much more mature attitude to the role of race in the genre of science fiction and fantasy than any film that's been released in our lifetime. So
is it part of the the library registry?
It could be. It's definitely on. It's a real favorite. It's better known over
a
here.
A few of his films are.
Yeah, it's a real. Yeah. I think it's much better known here, and it's much better known. I think it's become a real sort of cult favorite since it came out. I'd not really heard of it before I watched it. So, anyway,
there was like a box set. I don't know if it's available to get now. I'm sure it's on like eBay or Amazon or one of these other things, but I think it was part of a box set of like these early films that John Sayles did. It'd be quite nice to see if they ever get a hold of that, or maybe if they released it on the Criterion Collection or something like that in the UK or something. I hope at some point that a lot of his films kind of get recognized again, because not all of them are readily available in Region 2.
Yeah, well, in any case, whatever way you choose to watch it, legally or illegally, I hope people,
preferably legally. Right,
yeah, I do hope
people support the industry.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know, because if you buy it on Amazon, what are you supporting? Probably just Jeff Bezos, right?
Supporting Jeff Bezos, yeah, and his $200 billion.
I didn't really know what is the best way to support the filmmakers, especially for a film made in 84. But you know, do what you can. Buy it from your local DVD shop if you can. Yeah, it's your local DVD shop, like those things even exist. Anyway.
Back in my day, we had DVD shops on every corner.
The last ever Blockbuster is an Airbnb that you can stay in.
I did see that. I was like,
what has happened to the world?
Yeah, I know. I miss VHS. I miss rental
VHS
houses.
Too, God damn it. I'm glad you said that. Okay. Well, I need to go, but everyone should watch The Brother from Another Planet, and everyone should think more about how earthly racism expresses itself in faraway worlds that we create. Why should we export this stupid social disease? That's my thought for the day.
Yes, representation and masses.
Oh, and actually, good chance to plug W.E.B. Du Bois, which I know I always do, but there is a really, really great, again, science fiction short story called The Comet by Du Bois, which I think people should read, because, again, it talks about race in a way that's scarcely done in that genre. So, check that out.
Nice.
Oh, well, I better go. Have a good day or whatever. And be a citizen. Be well. Stay safe. Wear a mask.
Be
wash
well.
Your hands.
Be a citizen.
Shut up.
Wear a mask.
Wash your hands and shut up.
Sounds like a tagline for a John Wayne movie.
Yeah. Pilgrim.
Wash your hands and shut up.
Yeah. Who? Yeah. I mean, I'm glad John Wayne isn't alive, because he'd definitely be speaking at the Republican National Convention.
Oh, he'd be all over Twitter like the president is.
Oh, Jesus. It doesn't even bear thinking about.
Imagine one of his tweets. That would be amazing.
Yeah. Wow.
And then then people like Jimmy Stewart would be distancing themselves.
Oh, I don't know. Jimmy Stewart was pretty right wing as well. Look, let's get out of here, okay?
All right. Okay. Have a good day, everyone. Stay safe.
Bye.
Bye.